Now let's turn to Paul Starr, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning professor of sociology and public affairs at Princeton. He's also the co-editor with Robert Kuttner and co-founder with Robert Kuttner and Robert Reich of The American Prospect. His book, The Social Transformation of American Medicine, won the 1984 Pulitzer Prize for General Nonfiction, as well as the Bancroft Prize. In 1993, he was a senior advisor for President Bill Clinton's proposed healthcare reform plan, and his latest book is Remedy and Reaction, The Peculiar Struggle Over Healthcare Reform. Welcome to Background Briefing, Paul Starr.
Good to be with you, Ian.
And what do you think of today's news?
I think it's a miraculous decision. Miraculous because no one, I think, really expected that Anthony Kennedy would vote to overturn the law in its entirety and John Roberts, the Chief Justice, would vote to save it. That is the unexpected turn of events that really just no one, I think, fully anticipated. You read the Roberts opinion, and almost all of it validates the conservative arguments. The Chief Justice does not accept the view that the Interstate Commerce Clause or the Necessary and Proper Clause justify the Affordable Care Act. But instead, he does come to the view that the taxing power justifies the penalties and then goes on to uphold the rest of the law, except with one minor respect, and that's that has to do with the Medicaid provisions. But I initially thought, well, you know, the law survives, but there's a lot that conservatives have to celebrate here. But as I have looked at it more closely, I think this is really quite a substantial liberal victory. The doctrinal gains that conservatives have on the Commerce Clause, the limitations that are enunciated in Roberts' opinion, are not likely to be very relevant to anything else. So I don't think they're really going to matter in the long run. And the same with the Medicaid provisions. Well, that may be more complicated, but there's really a tremendous amount for those of us who've been fighting for universal health care for a long time. There's a lot to be happy with here.
And in terms of the Medicaid provisions, the 5-4 decision on that was basically saying that the federal government doesn't have the ability to punish the states if they don't go along with this new law. Now,
let me explain. Okay, what the opinion says is that the federal government cannot punish states by withholding all of the Medicaid money, including the money for Medicaid as it previously existed before this law was passed. But in all the history of Medicaid, going back to the beginning in 1965, the federal government has never refused to continue financing one state because of some disagreement about implementation of the law. This is not a power that the federal government has ever exercised. So losing this power is really not of great consequence.
But what about using the power to incentivize the states? You know, a number of attorney generals, almost half of the states, wanted to opt out. What incentives are there with these new insurance exchanges to have them join the pool?
Okay, those are two different things, the insurance exchanges and the Medicaid provisions.
Sure.
So Medicaid at the beginning in 1965 was voluntary for the states. It still is voluntary, but although there was some resistance, Arizona didn't have a Medicaid program until 1983, but all the states came in because there's a tremendous financial incentive for the states to take the federal money that is on offer. And in the case of this new Medicaid extension, 100% of the costs are going to be paid by the federal government for the first 3 years, and then it goes down to 90%. That's an incredibly good deal for the states. And really, it takes some governor like Rick Scott in Florida, or maybe Rick Perry in Texas, to say no to this. I expect that sooner or later, all the states will come in and expand Medicaid the way this law proposes.
Again, I'm speaking with Pulitzer Prize-winning Princeton's professor of sociology, Paul Starr, who is was a senior advisor to the Clinton healthcare reform plan. His latest book is Remedy and Reaction, The Peculiar Struggle Over Healthcare Reform. And the struggle, of course, will go on. The House is voting on July the 8th, a symbolic vote against so-called Obamacare. And candidate Romney came out against it today, saying the first thing he'd do if he's elected president was repeal it. The assumption is he doesn't really want to run on talking about health care because of his link to Massachusetts and so-called Obamacare. The battle is certainly not over. But it seems now that what's incumbent upon the president is to start selling this thing, because in the vacuum, hundreds of millions have been spent demonizing and demagoguing so-called Obamacare, and all of the fuss over the individual mandate was completely blown out of proportion, because that's only affects about 8% of the insurance pool.
So only actually about 7%. Would be affected by the mandate, but the estimate actually is that only about 4 million people, that's just a little bit over 1% of the population, would pay the penalties that the Chief Justice says amount to a tax. So this is not a tax on the general population as it is being represented by the Republicans. This is a tax that would fall on a relatively small number of people who don't buy insurance, even though they can afford it. Afford it in the sense that you'd only pay the penalty if, after subsidies, health insurance would cost less than 8% of your income. So that's the criteria in the law, and the mandate is just not the big, terrible thing that it's been held out to be.
So, what about the deficit then on the Democratic side and the White House side in selling this? And a lot of the benefits are backloaded till 2014.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one thing that I would have liked to see changed in the legislation to begin with, it was the slow timetable for carrying out the major provisions, the provisions that extend coverage to more than 30 million people. I would have liked to see an arrangement, which we actually had in the Clinton health plan, an arrangement called a rolling start, where states could have come in early that were eager to carry out the law. And I think we would have seen states like Massachusetts, Connecticut, Vermont, and maybe California that would have done this more quickly to be able to get the federal money sooner. And then we'd actually now have states that had carried it out by the time of the 2012 election. And, it would, I think, very substantially change the whole way the public looks at it.
So the president today, Paul Starr, he said that people would not need to hang their fortunes on chance. And he pointed out the insecurity and pain that so many people felt about health insurance, not being able to afford it, postponing any medical tests and visits often until it's too late. And that, I think, is the heart of what is sort of cruel and dysfunctional about our healthcare system. So what would you ask from the president now, given the latest polls indicate that most Americans still are against so-called Obamacare? And I think the reason why largely they're against it is that they don't know anything about it or know little about it. And, of course, there would be that core of Tea Party conservatives who'd be against it in any case. So just walk us through what the president needs to do here.
Well, I think now the president should feel much more confident about going out and defending the law and explaining the law. I think the White House probably held back in recent months waiting for this Supreme Court decision, because it wouldn't want to have put too much on this legislation if the court had struck it down entirely. That would really be counterproductive. But now I think the president should go out and he should highlight the many different benefits that people will have. And really, it's all those millions of people out there who have some kind of chronic illness, have some member of their family who's who've been sick with some disease, and you know, either they can't get insurance or they're paying a huge amount for it, or they're stuck in a job and afraid of starting a new business because it's impossible to get health insurance with their medical history. I mean, it's all those people out there, who it's just a huge number of people who should now really feel more confident and should really rise to support of this legislation.
Well, of course, in a political sense, it completely undercuts so much of the Republican argument against this president, where they've accused him of being a Muslim and a Kenyan and a fraud, etc. That underlying idea that he has no legitimacy, this ruling, of course, has given his signature achievement the legitimacy of a conservative Supreme Court.
Yes, yes. Well, let's also remember, though, there were four justices on that court who voted to overturn it altogether. So, actually, I think that's another reason for Obama to seek support. I mean, this was really very close, and one of the key questions for the next 4 years is going to be who is going to be nominating the new Supreme Court justices. Because if that conservative majority, if that conservative minority of four gets one more vote, they are ready to take the court in a very radical direction.
Well, Paul Starr, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Paul Starr, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning professor of sociology and public affairs at Princeton. He's also the co-editor with Robert Kuttner and co-founder with Robert Kuttner and Robert Reich of The American Prospect. And his book, The Social Transformation of American Medicine, won the 1984 Pulitzer Prize for General Nonfiction, as well as the Bancroft Prize. In 1993, he was a senior advisor for President Bill Clinton's proposed health care reform plan. His latest book is Remedy and Reaction, The Peculiar Struggle Over Health Care Reform. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with Maria Elena Durazo, the Executive Secretary Treasurer of the LA County Federation of Labor. She is leading she is leading the largest demonstration ever against Walmart in Los Angeles.